is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, brought to you by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I'm Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchner. And this week, we got a very special guest. It is Rich Hill of Pat's Pulpit. And Rich, you were one of the first guests I think we've ever had on with me and Adam. So it's good to have a returning guest back.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. It's been a full season. I actually don't know when. I think it was at the very beginning of the year.
Yeah,
I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we might have had you on around the playoffs last year.
Yeah, so, I think back in the old naked bootleg days.
Yeah. So we've rebranded since then, but we kind of always have like to have you on around these playoff times. And obviously the Patriots are not playing this weekend, so we're going to discuss a little bit later the potential opponents that they might go up against a week from Sunday at Gillette Stadium. But first, I'm just telling you off the air, Rich, that I was driving home today and I was, you know, doing the bad deed of listening to the 2-6 show on 98.5. And I didn't realize how many people were pretty negative about Tom Brady and even about his performance in some ways on Sunday. So I just wanted to get your take on how you think Brady has played this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly had some ups and downs. There have been stretches where he was battling a bajillion injuries. I just remember that I don't even know who they were against, but Tom Brady was sitting on the sideline and his knee was just completely bruised and battered. And it was the other knee that was listed on the injury report and his hand was, you know, torn up. So there was a stretch of time where he was just not in a great shape. He's had so much personnel turnover over the course of the entire year. They didn't have Julian Edelman for the first 4 weeks. Josh Gordon's been in and out of the lineup. Rex Burkhead has been in and out of the lineup. Sony Michel's been in and out of the lineup. Rob Gronkowski is not the same player that he once was. So honestly, this is probably one of the weakest supporting casts that Tom Brady has had in a long time. And he's still doing pretty well. If you look at how Brady's been producing by any metric, whether it's DVOA, adjusted net yards per attempt, points added, he's a top seven quarterback in the league. If we go and look and compare to some of the other players, sure, he's not playing at the same level as Patrick Mahomes or Drew Brees, but he's still one of the top quarterbacks in the entire NFL. He's done it without any real consistency in the supporting cast. And so I think any outcry that he's done is very much overblown. And I think that he is still very much good enough to help this Patriots team win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page here. I think a lot of people and with this team as a whole are starting to compare them to past Patriots teams and saying, okay, so Tom Brady in 2018 isn't as good as Tom Brady in 2017, and maybe the team isn't as good as it was in 2017. Instead of looking at it and saying, how is Tom Brady compared to the rest of the 32 starters in the league, or how are the Patriots compared to the rest of the 32 teams in the league? And when you look at it Brady to Brady, it's not as good. But when you look at it Brady to, let's say, Ryan Tannehill, now we're, you know, you're looking and you're painting a different picture. So I think the biggest thing is Tom Brady up to Tom Brady's standards? Probably not. But is he, like you said, still a top six, top seven? I think he's sixth in PFF grade. He's sixth in DVOA. He's, you know, expected points added. He's right around there too. Is he as good as everybody else around him in the league? Yes. Is he upper echelon MVP Brady? Not yet, or he hasn't been. And I think that a lot of the things that are happening around him are a big reason for that as well. And also, you know, he has to shoulder some of the blame too. I mean, in that game against the Jets, that miss that he had to Chris Hogan, you don't want to make too much of it because every quarterback has a bad miss every once in a while. But that's just not a throw that if Brady's on his best of his game, at the top of his game, he misses. You know, that's a layup. That's not one that he's going to overthrow very often. Some of the decision-making, I think there are some questionable things there with, like, having tunnel vision, maybe not seeing the whole field. But, I mean, we're nitpicking. Like, I think that's the biggest thing for me is that Tom Brady has kind of set the bar so high for himself that we have to kind of go and nitpick you know, this one throw here in the second quarter, or this one throw here in the red zone. And we have to go that direction because the body of work has just been so good for so long.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, like Rich said, it's all about context when I look at it, because, you know, Edelman for four games, Gronk not being the same, you know, having to pick up and bring along a guy like Josh Gordon who didn't end up working out all the way through. It's like the offense didn't really have a full set of personnel and set of plays that would work the entire year. It just seemed out of rhythm all year. So given that, you know, set of circumstances, I think he did almost about as well as he could have. But, you know, there are things like that you would pick up here and there, like the, you know, him not fully stepping into throws, that sort of thing. But honestly, given his age and the circumstances surrounding him this year, I think he did much better than people are giving him credit for, because, like, you know, it's almost like Patriots fans sometimes don't watch the bad quarterbacks around the league.
Exactly what it is,
and how bad quarterback play can be if you're a bad QB and
or bad teams around the league in general.
Yeah, it's funny. Like the Patriots will beat a team by, you know, 14 points, and Patriots fans aren't satisfied. They think they'll play sloppy or whatever, but it's just funny. I think obviously this wasn't his best season, Brady's. But I think like Rich said at first, it really has a lot to do with the context, the guys surrounding him. And, you know, it's been a tough, you know, they've had a guy like Sony Michel play like a rookie play such a prominent role in the offense. You know, it's been sort of a transitional year. So I think when it comes to that, you can sort of excuse a lot of that.
Yeah, and I mean, whenever you have a team where your top 2 yard gainers are running backs, you know it's going to be a run-first team. The Patriots understand that they don't have the same offensive personnel that they've had in the past. They made a very clear attempt in the middle of the season to try and acquire a number one wide receiver because they realized they didn't have one. They got one temporarily in Josh Gordon, but he's not available anymore. And so, yeah, this is going to be a run first team in the playoffs. But with that said, Tom Brady is still good enough to take advantage of the play action that stems from the fact that they're so good at running the ball. They're so effective. And because he's still so dangerous in the play action, teams can't just say, oh, well, he's not playing like Patrick Mahomes. You know, just like the level that Tom Brady's playing at, you still have to respect him as being one of the best quarterbacks in the entire league. So there's no disadvantage for the Patriots from like a schematic standpoint as far as how other teams will approach them.
Yeah, I don't think there's a necessarily great way to kind of measure this, but this Patriots team went 11-5 with Brady. If you replace Brady with like a replacement level quarterback, like the average quarterback in the NFL, what's this team's record? You know, are they above 500?
It'll be Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they are above 500 because Belichick is just that good, but they're certainly not the 2 seed in the AFC.
No. You know?
And maybe they win their division because the rest of the division stinks, but you know, they might have to win the division at 8-8, 9-7. It's not going to be as pretty as it has been. They're not going to beat Kansas City. They're not going to beat Green Bay. They're not winning those games with, you know, a guy that's more middling of the road than Brady. All right. We've defended Tom Brady enough. We can move on to the next thing, and that is to preview a little bit here, Wild Card Weekend, obviously, and kind of look at it through a Patriots lens. And I had Rich make a list of the teams that he was the least afraid of to face here at Gillette Stadium a week from Sunday, and the most afraid. Let's start with number 3, the least afraid, Rich. You tell people which one it is.
Yeah, I came out with the Houston Texans as the team that I'm least afraid of. And part of it is because, you know, how good the other teams are. But we'll break that down in a bit. But just leading off with the Texans, few things I'm not afraid of is just their lack of personnel depth overall. I mean, you have DeAndre Hopkins, who for my money is a top 3 wide receiver in the entire NFL. You go after Hopkins. Yeah, I trust the Patriots with Stephon Gilmore. Maybe he won't blank him, but that's a great contest that Gilmore is arguably the best cornerback in all the NFL. So that's a good matchup. who else did the Texans have, guys?
I got a lot of heat for saying this, all right? So I got a lot of heat from people for saying that the Texans don't have any other weapons besides DeAndre Hopkins. I was told that Vincent Smith and DeAndre Carter and Ryan Griffin and the rookie tight ends that they drafted this past draft were all guys that the Patriots were going to have to worry about. Jordan Jenkins, Jordan Thomas, those types of guys. Yeah. Who all have under 300 receiving yards this season, by the way. But we're supposed to be afraid of them, is what I'm telling you. So, I mean, maybe the fear is that all of those guys kind of get blended into one, and you don't really know which one is kind of the guy to stop other than Hopkins, and Watson can just spread the ball out to all five guys. I think the biggest thing for me is actually they need to contain Watson in the pocket.
Yep.
Because really, he can kind of mitigate a lot of the issues that they have at receiver by extending plays.
Yeah.
He can't cover everybody for 4 or 5 seconds, right? So even if they don't have the Will Fullers or the Demaryius Thomases to support Hopkins, if he's running around like he did last year in that game where they almost pulled off that upset, then all of a sudden there's guys are going to get open. The Ryan Griffins of the world and the rookie tight ends and Kiki Kutu, if he plays, those types of guys are all of a sudden going to become weapons because Watson is just running around.
Yeah, that's this was sort of a difficult exercise for me because, at first I was thinking that Houston wouldn't be at this place. I have Houston the same place as Rich does. But the only thing that makes me think twice about that is that Watson factor, because out of the three quarterbacks, to me, he's the one that scares me the most or would scare me the most as a coach or a player, just because he can make a negative play. He can take a negative play and turn it into such a big positive play. And I think, he has that ability to bring a team back on his back. He almost even did it the first game of the year when neither team was really playing well at all. It was the really ugly game that first game of the year. But, I mean, I feel like Deshaun is one of those guys where it almost doesn't matter who's his supporting cast is sometimes, because – He'll just make a play. He'll find ways to make a play. But, when it comes down to it, I'd feel a lot different about this Houston team if Fuller was playing, if, Demaryius Thomas was playing, if I had confidence in somebody, better than Lamar Miller. I just feel like, it's a pretty good defense. They got a good pass rush. They got some good players on defense. All three of these teams have good defenses, in my opinion. But to me, if you only have DeAndre Hopkins as your weapon, and you can sort of try to make the rest of the guys beat you, even with a guy as good as Deshaun, I hold him in very high esteem. But I just don't think there's enough there to beat you if you take away Hopkins.
Yeah, I agree. I think especially if the Patriots have all this time to prepare to stop a mobile quarterback, they can do it. I think they've proven that they've been able to handle these sorts of quarterbacks this year, if not perfectly, at least well enough where they can't do it consistently through the entire game. I would actually arguably say that if the Texans were to come into New England and pull off the upset, it would be because of the strength of their defense. Right. And that is because of the teams in the AFC. There aren't many that have better defensive fronts. J.J. Watt is playing at his old level. He's still fantastic. Clowney and Merciless are two very, very good pass rushers. D.J. Reader, I think, is one of the best nose tackles in the entire league. Their secondary is not great, but the linebacker duo of Zach Cunningham and Bernardrick McKinney, I like them a lot. And so if the Patriots, as I mentioned at the beginning, are going to be relying on their run to set up the pass, the Texans have a defensive front that could theoretically be able to throw a wrench into that plan by stopping the Patriots' rushing attack and forcing Tom Brady to go through the air, where maybe the Patriots' weapons won't be able to beat out these Texans' defensive backs.
Yeah, I mean, these three defenses that we're going to talk about tonight, Baltimore is 3 in DVOA, Houston 7, and the Chargers are 8. So these three defenses are all top 10 DVOA defenses. all three really good, and the front is exactly, you know, where you start. And also the familiarity to me with Romeo Crennel as the defensive coordinator there. He has game planned and practiced against Tom Brady so many times at this point that over the last couple of years, you kind of have seen him come up with game plans that have given Brady some pause and have confused Brady a little bit, or maybe not confused him, but slowing him down. Even in that playoff game a few years ago, if Brock Osweiler wasn't the quarterback of the Texans that day, then that game is a completely different ball game in 2016. So I think there's a lot of, you know, kind of breadcrumbs that lead to the Houston defense being able to have success. But like you said, Rich, I think the biggest thing is Kareem Jackson's playing at an extremely high level, but behind him at cornerback, they are pretty thin. And a guy in Aaron Colvin, who they brought over from Jacksonville to really solidify that slot position, has not had a great year. As a big free agent signing that they brought over. Justin Reed, who Adam obviously we loved in the draft, is kind of coming on here in the second half of the season as a rookie. But the Honey Badger isn't really who he once was anymore. Jonathan Joseph isn't really who he once was anymore. So that might be the depth of that secondary might be able to be where the Patriots win, but they're going to have to be able to protect Brady to even have a chance against his defense.
Yeah, and I think you gave a lot of credit to the fact that the Texans linebackers, maybe they're not perfect, they're not like the Jaguars linebackers where they can go sideline to sideline, but they're good enough to kind of disrupt the Patriots' reliance on the running backs whenever they face a good defensive line.
McKinney is a really good run-stuffing linebacker.
Yeah,
and then you can't rely on the swing passes as much, which the Patriots like to do their quick passes out into the flat if they want to try and slow down an opposing pass rush. If you have fast linebackers like the Texans have, it's not going to be as effective.
Yeah, this Texans team, a lot of love for Bill O'Brien for Coach of the Year. And basically pulled that team from what I think they were 0-3 to where they are now. So yeah. a big turnaround for them. All right, Rich, number two, this is kind of where it gets interesting, right? One and two could kind of go either way here.
Yep, absolutely. So my number two team, so of the three teams, the one that I feel lukewarm about would be the Baltimore Ravens. And part of that is driven by the fact that they are the Baltimore Ravens. That's literally it. For me, I mean, on paper, the Texans have a better offense. On paper, I wouldn't say that their defenses are too different. So I would say that like the Ravens are any better. But I give a lot of credence to the fact that the Ravens aren't afraid of anybody. And when you have Harbaugh coming around, he's shown that he can take his team, come into New England and you know, punch them in the mouth and not be afraid. And that goes a long way in the postseason. There's a question of how will their rookie quarterback Lamar Jackson respond in the postseason, and if he can play fearless, he is the most mobile rushing quarterback I've seen in a long time, and that scares me because the Patriots love to play soft zone defense against rookie quarterbacks, and that could mean Lamar Jackson could heat up as a passer. And he can do a lot of damage on the ground. And I just don't want to see that happen. I just feel like it's a recipe for disaster against the Ravens offense. And then the Ravens defense is great. They have, you know, six different people in their defensive front seven that could ruin the Patriots' day up front. They have a great secondary. I really think Eric Weddle is one of the most underrated safeties of the past decade. And they just have so much talent that you there's no easy place to beat them. And the Patriots honestly just don't have the offensive talent to beat them across the board on offense versus the Ravens defense. So Baltimore scares me from the fact that if the Patriots get off to a slow start, they might have trouble regaining their footing.
Yeah, I went with the Chargers, but it was sort of like a 1A, 1B type thing. The Chargers are so difficult because like at first I wasn't going to really have them as high, but then I looked at all the results again and the only road game they lost was at the Rams. And they went to, and everybody remembers just a few weeks ago when they went to Kansas City and rallied past the Chiefs on the road and won on a 2-point conversion. I mean, I think it was a prime time game too. I mean, how much more clutch does it get than that? I mean, obviously, you know, they've got like a lot of different pass rushers. And Phillip Rivers can just you know, spread the ball around to a bunch of different guys. They just have more weapons, it seems. They don't have anybody quite as good as DeAndre Hopkins, but they still have, you know, a lot of guys that they can spread the ball around to. It's a good balanced offense. And so, you know, that's just one of those teams I feel like it is very similar to the Ravens in a way that they just have like a good feeling about them going into the playoffs. You know, I feel like any team that can go, like, that's as impressive a road win as I've seen this year, is going to Arrowhead, coming back from a deficit like that in that atmosphere and winning. So yeah, I think the Chargers present a lot of different problems. They're just another one of those defenses too, where if the Patriots are in a position where they have to just start chucking the ball around, you know, that's a hard front to block for four quarters. So, you know, the Chargers for me were very, very close to being one on my list, but that's mine.
Yeah, I put Baltimore at number two as well. And the main reason being is just, I just don't know if I can see Lamar Jackson coming into Gillette Stadium and winning a playoff game against Belichick. Obviously, the history is on the Patriots side big time in that one, with rookie quarterbacks coming and playing them on the road. But the main reason isn't just, you know, something that happened 15 years ago. It's mainly just watching Lamar play right now. Even his accurate passes are not that accurate at times. Like, even the ones he completes are like down by the shoestrings, or making his receivers kind of, you know, make adjustments on the ball in the air to make those types of catches. And, it, you know, he makes some really nice throws, which he did in college as well. You know, in the middle of the field, anticipation throws in the middle of the field, deep balls that, you know, down the seams to his tight ends. That's kind of where he lives. So I think that the main thing is that it's an unconventional offense, and they have two running backs in Gus Edwards, who's just they call him Gus Bus for a reason. He's just a tank. And then they have Buck Allen, who's a great receiving back. So that's going to kind of have to be how they're going to have to out-scheme the Patriots defense, right? They're going to have to trick the Patriots defense in a lot of ways with scheme, with those triple options, with the RPOs, with that kind of stuff, to put up enough points to beat Tom Brady. Now, the defense of the Baltimore Ravens is as legit as any team in the entire playoffs right now. The guy that Marlon Humphrey is playing out of his mind right now. He's probably, over the second half of the season, been a top five or six cornerback in the league, and they're just stacked from, you know, every level of the defense. It reminds me in a lot of ways of that Jacksonville defense a year ago, where you're just like, where's the weakness of this defense? Because they just have players at all 11 starters, and even some of their backup guys that come in as like rotational players on their defensive line are really good too. So that's going to really be the question. This game between the Patriots and the Ravens, if it does happen, you would think it would be something like a 20-17, 20-14. It's going to be very low scoring. The Patriots are going to have to win the game with their defense, obviously, by, I would say, forcing Lamar Jackson to beat you with throws to his receivers on the outside. It's going to have to be, you know, a throw to John Brown or Willie Snead or Michael Crabtree, and the other guys, the backs and the tight ends, are going to be the kind of the game plan to take those guys out. So the biggest question is can Lamar Jackson make enough throws in a game like that to put up enough points? Because they're not going to win a game just by running the football. You're not going to win in the playoffs like that. You're going to have to make 4 to 5, maybe even 6 throws in a game against Tom Brady to beat him. So the question is can Lamar Jackson do that? And I think that in some ways he can, if the game goes the way that they want it to, and they can kind of create those big throwing lanes for him with play action, with zone read, with that kind of stuff. But if the Patriots can stop the run with 8 guys in the box, it's going to be tough for Lamar to kind of put together a good enough game through there. He's only thrown for over 200 yards once in his 7 starts. Like, his completion percentage is under 60%. He's struggling as a passer right now, just to put it frankly.
Yeah, and I think what plays into the Patriots' benefit a little bit as well is the fact that while Gus Edwards is a great running back, he's not a receiver. He has 2 targets on the year, and that is one way that opposing teams can put stress on the Patriots by throwing to their running backs, forcing the Patriots linebackers to sit back a little bit. But the fact that Gus Edwards is not used as a receiver plays into the Patriots' favor a little bit, because when they sack the box, as you said, when they try to make sure Lamar Jackson can't escape, they can feel a little more confident that they don't have to worry about a running back leaking out. They can kind of pin their ears back and try and set them up for second and long, third and long. And you don't really have that same lack of flexibility with the other teams.
Yeah, the reason why I picked Baltimore is that, like Rich said, you know, they're one of those teams that doesn't fear the Patriots at all. They don't come into Gillette Stadium intimidated. A lot of teams come in and they're already beaten before they get there. I don't think the Ravens are one of those teams. I think they have a nice blend of experience and youth in key positions. I think they, I think the thing that makes them the most difficult, in my opinion, is they can make you play a style of game where it's almost impossible to win. If they have one of these games, right, where they control the clock to the extent that they've been doing, and they get up by 10 points, that can seem like 30 points, even against the offense like the Pats, with the defense that they have. You know, they're controlling the ball. They're playing, you know, old school running game and defense football. And it looks different because of how they're doing it with all the quarterback runs. But that's still a hard way to win, is if you don't have the ball, you can't score. So if the Ravens come in here and they pop up to an early lead and, you know, the Patriots defense can't get off the field. I mean, here's the thing about stopping this offense too, is it's, you know, there are other offenses that might look like this with other quarterbacks. With Lamar, it's just different because of how explosive he is. And you might feel like you have him bottled up, but who do you like in a one-on-one tackling scenario? Is it Lamar Jackson or a Patriots linebacker?
Or anybody in the Patriots front? Right. Like that, you can't have those kind of situations, right? You know,
yeah, I think
you have to find a way to be a team defense in those situations.
I just think the Ravens offense matches up really well with the Patriots defense. And I
guess I would counter by asking who on that Ravens offense other than Lamar Jackson requires more than single coverage by the Patriots. Because I think that the Patriots match up favorably across the board from all of the receiving threats in a way that maybe the Texans, even with Gilmore, I don't know if I would trust him in single coverage on an island against Hopkins the entire game. You got Keenan Allen of the Chargers. I mean, Melvin Gordon can take over games. There's just certain depth to those other teams where I'd be like, okay, well, I wouldn't feel confident if you put Lamar Jackson in those offenses. I wouldn't feel confident dedicating more of my defensive resources to stopping the run. Whereas with the Ravens, I would feel pretty comfortable with one-on-one across the board and then dedicating an extra player or two in the box to make sure that Jackson can't escape.
Well, I think it's more to what Evan was talking about with the types of like throws he makes. You try to limit those throws to the middle of the field. I feel like a guy like Mark Andrews is a real weapon, is really developing into a weapon as a rookie, as a tight end. And that's where, you know, those throws are going to be dangerous because he's athletic, he's big, you know, he can break, you know, I think he had his longest touchdown reception of the year from Lamar, I forget how long it was, but and he's a tough guy to match up with, period, even if you're putting Chung on him. So I feel like it's one of those deals where, you know, I think it's more than just, you know, this player here or that player there. It's the style of game that they can't get into where, you know, Baltimore gets ahead, you know, and they just start limiting the time of possession for the Patriots, and the margin of error gets slimmer and slimmer. All right, on the flip side of that, you know, if you get Baltimore behind by 10 points, then, you know, it's, I don't see them as the type of team that can rally from a deficit like that against this Patriots team. In that scenario, I'd much rather be, a team with a Deshaun Watson at quarterback or something like that. But So I think it really, for me, it comes down to what type of game script comes out. You know, is it, if it's that low scoring game where, you know, the Ravens really control the clock and, you know, limit possessions for the Patriots, I think it could be very dangerous for them.
Yeah, I think that in order for the Ravens to win a game like that, the offense almost needs to turn it into a track meet when they have the ball and stretch the Patriots defense horizontally with guys like Lamar, obviously, in the backs, but John Brown, Mark Andrews, those are guys that are fast players for their positions that can maybe stretch the field a little bit for them. But I think that really with the defense, when kind of speaking to your point about time of possession, this Ravens defense, what makes it so impressive is they don't win on turnovers. Like, they're not a defense that creates a ton of turnovers. No. They win on third down and getting off the field. They're tied for 22nd in takeaways this year, but they're third in third down percentage. So they're doing this. This defense is, you know, one of the top five decent defenses in the league without huge turnover numbers, which is usually not, you know, normal. You know, usually the top defenses are the teams that are forcing a ton of turnovers. This Ravens defense is just tough to move the ball on. It's tough to sustain drives on. So that's when you can kind of, you know, you can't get on the field. You can't get off the field offensively. You know, you can't stay on the field. And then defensively, you're kind of in a bind with the unconventional offense that they present to you. And that's kind of how the Ravens muddy this game up and win it. But I'm still not 100% sold that Lamar has enough throws in him to beat Belichick, because I really do think that when Belichick push comes to shove, when he needs a run defense, the Patriots are going to find a run defense with scheme and with kind of personnel usage by stacking the box, by going heavy with playing base defense. And then my guess is that, you know, with your one-on-one matchup with Lamar, I would assume that Devin McCourty or Patrick Chung is going to be the spy. And they're going to put a safety, a guy with some real speed. It might even be McCourty, where they take McCourty out of the middle of the field and they just say to him, you know what, we're playing cover zero most of the game, and we're going to rely on Gilmore and Jason McCourty and J.C. Jackson to slow down their receivers at the line of scrimmage and not get beat over the top. And we're going to use Devin as a spy on Lamar because he's the fastest player we have on the team. So someone's got to do it that isn't a linebacker. But again, I think that there is a formula for sure that the Baltimore Ravens can win this game. I see it more than the Houston Texans, honestly. But I just don't know if Lamar has enough throws at him. But now that we kind of put this out there, obviously number one for me and Rich is the Chargers. And Rich, I just wanted to hear why you put the Chargers at number one.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is just at that quarterback level, because Philip Rivers had a career year. He is playing lights out. He's outstanding. And that's the difference between the Ravens and the Chargers for me, is that I understand that Lamar Jackson is just such a unique talent and it would be such a unique threat for the Patriots to try and defend. Philip Rivers is just very good. He's good against any team that they play, no matter the defense. I know that I guess other than the Ravens, of course, they didn't do too much against them, but he has been highly productive. He has Keenan Allen as his bona fide number one guy. He has a good supporting cast behind him, the Mike Williams, Tyrell Williams. You can even throw Antonio Gates in there as another depth option. They might get Hunter Henry back. But yeah, they just have so many options around on the offense that I don't think you can single cover all of them. Specifically, you can't do Keenan Allen. They trust Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler as receiving backs out of the backfield. And so that's going to be a nightmare for the Patriots linebackers in coverage. That's something that I would expect the Chargers to win in that matchup. And then you throw in the fact that they have a great defense from top to bottom. They have one of the best pass rushing duos in the league, Melvin Ingram, Joey Bosa. You know, Bosa's been dealing with an injury all year, but I mean, they still have so much talent up front. They have, one of the most impressive secondaries with both Hayward and I think Dez King is really, really good as well. So they just have so much talent top to bottom on both sides of the football. They're top 10 in scoring, top 10 in defense. They're just so well-rounded. And I think Adam mentioned this, but just like their track record of going on the road and playing well. I mean, that road loss to the Rams was back in week 3. So right. The fact that they've gone everywhere, they went into Pittsburgh, they beat the Steelers. They went into Kansas City, beat the Chiefs. They went into Denver, beat the Broncos. They went to Seattle, beat the Seahawks. Those are some of the most difficult places to play and win. And so there will be no fear when they come to play against the Patriots. And unlike the Ravens, they have a quarterback with a lot of experience. So there won't be any of that, you know, flash in the pan. Can he do it? They know they can do it. They just have so much success everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, really, to me, the matchup is horrible on paper. And the only things that I can come up with are kind of superficial stuff, like Philip Rivers doesn't have a great track record in the playoffs. And it's a, it's a West Coast team coming East Coast, you know, it, like those types of things that like really aren't real. Because on paper, it's like a really difficult matchup, because I think Gilmore matches best up with Mike Williams, but then who do you put on Keenan Allen? And then you're probably doubling Keenan Allen in the slot. And when you double a slot receiver, now you're like having other issues at other places. And then Melvin Gordon is kind of that exact that can catch the ball out of the backfield. It reminds me a lot of a threat that like Kareem Hunt would be to the Patriots when the Chiefs had Kareem Hunt, where maybe he's not a guy that's going to catch 10 passes like James White, but he's going to catch that one that's going to go 70 yards on him because they get a linebacker on a wheel route or something like that, and he's capable of running by him. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I just remember that game last year between these two teams, and the Patriots front just could not block Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa. Those two guys really almost ruined the day for the Patriots, and they almost won that game on the road at Gillette Stadium because of that pass rush, really. And now they've just added to the secondary. Desmond King, as you mentioned, has kind of taken that next step forward. Obviously, Derwin James is a borderline all-pro candidate as a rookie. This rookie class conversation for a separate time is unbelievable. And Derwin James is like right up there with some of the better rookies in this class. That matchup, him versus Gronk, if it happens, is like an all-time great matchup of a, you know, kind of the all-pro tight end versus the safety. So all the advanced metrics sites, they all love the Chargers. You know, DVOA, EPA, all that kind of stuff. It's like the Chiefs and the Chargers are 1 and 2 in a lot of those rankings, even ahead of the teams in the NFC. So I think the biggest thing for the Patriots is obviously they're going to benefit from being at home. And I think that this offense at least is a conventional offense. So you're not facing a ton of zone read. You're not facing a mobile quarterback. You're facing a drop back offense, which Belichick has usually had more success against because he just has more experience game planning for something like that. But, I mean, they have a lot of weapons on the offensive side of the ball that are going to be really difficult to match up against, and you're going to have to score against a really good defense to keep up with that offense. So it's a tough matchup for me on paper, and I'm almost like don't want any part of the Chargers. Because they're only kind of Achilles heel, I would say, as a team, is probably their offensive line isn't like as good as some of the other offensive lines in the league, and they may be kind of vulnerable in some spots, but even still, they have so many explosive playmakers. And I just keep coming back to the Keenan Allen matchup, because it's JC Jack. It's probably going to be like Jason McCourty with a bracket, you know, with a safety help. But then when you double a slot receiver, it just really kind of muddies everything up on the perimeter and what you're doing covering the back, because you're occupying a safety with a double and then nobody else has help. And it just kind of it kind of trickles down from there. And this is one of those teams where if you double one guy and you give single coverage to everybody else, as good as Gilmore has been all year, you throw a ball up to Mike Williams and he's as good of a jump ball receiver as there is. And he's going to catch one. You know, you kind of just feel like he's gonna have a chance to at least catch one. So really the way that you kind of beat this Chargers team offensively, at least, is get pressure on Rivers. And that's what they're going to have to do.
Yeah, and the other thing, when you bring up a guy like Derwin James, this guy's not on the team last year. And then, you know, it's funny how sometimes, like, a guy can be exactly as good as everybody hoped he would be in the draft. Yeah. Remember, you know, like, you know, how it translates perfectly to the NFL for him. Like, he was such a playmaker in college. And, you know, that's kind of what he is now. It's like when you add a guy like him, who is not just good at his position, but can do things that you wouldn't normally see out of him. Like he's good at rushing the passer. He's good at coming off one guy and going somewhere else and helping them out. He makes everybody around him better, which is so crazy for how young he is. And so he gives them a sort of another guy you have to game plan for. And he's just a playmaker. He's one of those guys that can, in my opinion, in a game like this, you know, if it's a one score game, you know, make an interception, pop loose a forced fumble, something like that, that can just turn the game on its side. I just think, you know, and as a rookie, he's putting up like all pro type numbers. I mean, it's crazy.
He's on my second team, all pro team right now.
Yeah.
And that's just because Eddie Jackson and Jamal Adams are freaks. So right. He would probably be a first team all pro if those two guys didn't have the seasons that they had.
Yeah. He's just somebody, he's just an extra guy you have to account for that you wouldn't have had to last year.
Yeah.
And you know, he can blitz, he can cover sort of anybody. And he's a playmaker, and you really just can't, you can't always game plan for some guys like that. So, you know, he's one of those X factor guys that I think is going to be tough for them to handle if it comes to that.
Yeah, this would be a great matchup for just like one-on-one matchups. Like you're going to have all across the board, Derwin James versus Gronk, Dez King versus Julian Edelman in the slot. Dez King, one of the better slot receivers, Edelman, obviously one of the best slot receivers, how the Patriots match up with the wide receivers. But one other positive, because it sounds like we're being very dark about the Patriots' chances against the Chargers, is that Gus Bradley is the defensive coordinator of the Chargers. Gus Bradley, obviously the old defensive coordinator of the Seattle Seahawks. It's the same exact scheme that the Seahawks run, that cover three scheme where they like to rotate the coverage towards the strong side of the formation, which usually means that you can get James White on a linebacker on the backside of that. And you could probably have one of those games for James White where he has 10 catches for, you know, 85 yards and a touchdown. Guy like Kyle Emanuel, Jatavius Brown, they're off the ball linebackers are not a strength, I would say, of this defense, as good as they are in other areas. So it's a similar scheme that they've prepared against a lot lately in the playoffs, whether it's been the Seahawks or the Atlanta Falcons running a similar scheme or the Jaguars running it. So a lot of these teams are kind of emulating the Seahawks pattern match cover three. Even the Patriots and sometimes are doing a lot of the same things. So it's not an unfamiliar scheme defensively for Josh McDaniels and for Brady. So it's really just going to come down to one-on-one matchups and if their guys can win enough of them. Which is, you know, if that's what it comes down to, like that's what it comes down to this time of year, right? Is do you have the bodies and the players to win those one-on-one matchups against a good defense? Because, like we said, I mean, no matter who they play in this divisional round or even in the conference championship game, unless it's Kansas City, they're going to have to play a good defense at some point down this road here.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, you step back from it a little bit and all three of these teams are dangerous. You know, I kind of feel like we're splitting hairs on some of them, but like, you know, I mean, all there's something dangerous about each one of these teams. If we're having the Texans third across the board, but I mean, look at their pass rush, look at the quarterback they have. I mean, you know, they're always going to be dangerous if Deshaun is on the field and get thrown to a guy like Hopkins, even if they don't have as many complimentary pieces around. It's going to be tough no matter who they play.
Great.
I think a lot of this is driven by the fact that our sentiment about this version of the Patriots team is not as strong as it has been in previous years.
It definitely sounds like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like if this were a Patriots of 2016, even 2017, I might look at it and be like, oh yeah, Patriots are going to win this one comfortably. You know, and I'm not like too worried about them going on the road. Of course I trust them to do it. It's just that the Patriots don't really have as strong of an identity at this point as they typically have. I don't know what their offensive identity is. They have like a fine one on defense with their secondary, but I don't know what's going on with their defensive front seven. So yeah, there's just still so many question marks about the Patriots that it's hard to feel overly confident about any possible matchup. Even if it was if they could play the Colts, I still wouldn't feel great about that. So there isn't an easy path to the Super Bowl. That said, they could still very well make the Super Bowl.
Yeah. It's definitely muddier than it has been in years past. And their offensive identity, like we keep asking Brady, you ask Edelman, you ask, you know, the big guys, like, well, what is the identity of the offense? And their answer is kind of just like, it is what it is. You know, like it's this week we have to run the ball and this week we have to throw the ball. You know, this is a big Gronk week because they're defending us this way, or this is a big Edelman week because they're defending us that way. It's kind of just they go into the games with kind of a loose plan, and then they adjust to whatever the defense is doing. And that's kind of what happened with the Jets. The Jets were dead set on not letting them run the football like they did against them the first time around in week 12. They weren't going to get run on for 200 yards again. So then the Patriots went in with their, you know, kind of heavy packages, and then they spread the Jets out. So they had James Devlin playing wide receiver to kind of confuse the coverages of the Jets, and they got some one-on-one matchups for their skill players, and that worked out for them. But there is no – when it's – you know, Adam and I have been saying this all year. When it's third and six in the Super Bowl, you know, who's getting the ball? What's the play call? You know, what kind of formation are they in? You know, where's the look? Where's Brady going? I don't even know if they, like, I hope they know the answer to that, but it's kind of hard from the outside looking in to know the answer to that right now.
Yeah. Edelman. It'll be Edelman.
Yeah. Right. Like, I think that that's really the only place that you can go with it, is that it's going to have to be Edelman or maybe James White if the situation is, you know, third and short, or it's short enough distance that you can throw a pass to a running back out of the backfield. All right, Rich, thank you very much for coming on with us again. Is there anything you want to tease or tell people to look forward to?
No, I mean, just everyone, thanks for listening to this podcast. You can find my stuff at patspulpit.com, but I really appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully the Patriots, you know, can win a week from Sunday, and maybe we'll have you on again soon. And we'll see what the matchup is. You know, after breaking all of these down, I think all of these are going to be whoever it is that is coming here. There's not going to be one of those games where there's no storylines, right? You know, there's going to be plenty of angles. Years past, you know, the Titans and the Brock Osweiler Texans, it hasn't exactly been, you know, a star-studded team coming in here for the divisional round. This year, it kind of sounds like it's going to be. Adam, what do you got coming down?
Well, with the first signing day out of the way and now coming up to the second one, or the more traditional one, I guess you could say, we're still doing a lot of recruiting coverage over at Mass Varsity, both for the local colleges and the high schools. We're already getting into some of the kids, juniors, sophomores, freshmen, that are already getting offers. I just talked to the Everett High coach today, who has a freshman, a 14-year-old wide receiver slash corner slash defensive back, who already holds a Michigan offer. So that's pretty exciting. And it's just mostly you know, looking back at the seasons we've seen and looking ahead, and then and a lot of recruiting stuff.
All right, your quick take, who's winning the national championship game on Monday?
Alabama. Yeah.
Not even a hesitation. I didn't even get the words out of my mouth.
I mean, you know, anything can happen, and Clemson's a good team. And but this Alabama team, just they make it look so easy at times. I think the fact that Tua is so accurate and their receivers are so good and they're so deep. I mean, they have guys who barely play that would be studs on other teams. I mean, they just have so much depth. I mean, when you put together that level of talent, it's so hard to compete with. I mean, anything's possible, and obviously Georgia almost beat them. So who knows? And I really like the quarterback at Clemson. I just feel like, you know, this is a great rivalry now. It's become in the college football playoff of Alabama and Clemson almost every year. But, you know, just this Alabama team is sick. And, you know, the in addition to all the great players they have on offense, this Quinnen Williams guy they have on the defensive line is
wildly good.
Unbelievably good. I mean, I think everybody should tune in just to watch this guy, let alone everybody else, including a kid from Springfield on Clemson named Christian Wilkins, who is another guy who might be a first-round draft pick. I mean, there'll be NFL talent all over this field.
Let's hope that Christian Wilkins slides to the Patriots at the end of the first round. That's all I'm going to say about him. But I think the thing that surprised me the most about Bama watching them in that game, well, two things. One, it was just clear how much bigger everybody was than the players on Oklahoma.
Yeah,
right. Like on the both sides of the scrimmage, like I feel like the Oklahoma guys are just like looking up to these like giants, and are just like, what the heck? Like Kyler Murray like decided to play baseball during that game. Like he was just like, all right, I'm playing baseball. Like I don't want any part of this. Like this is what the guys are going to be like in the next level. I'm out. And then also, but like the other thing is really their wide receivers. Like I think that we always talk about Bama along the line of scrimmage, their defensive talent. Obviously, every year they're like turning out these first round picks on defense. defense, but a wide receiver, they're four deep with guys that are probably going to be like top 50 picks in the NFL draft over the next couple of years. And that's not usually like what I think we're accustomed to seeing. You know, they obviously at Bama, they've had like the Amari Coopers and the Julio Joneses, but they've never really had this kind of insane depth at that position where they're just, you know, so many guys that they can throw the ball to. And then you have a guy like Tua who is just the perfect trigger man to throw it to all of them. Yeah, I think Bama is going to win the game. I think this is one year where maybe you didn't need the playoff. Like, these two teams are like clearly the two best teams in college football.
Yeah.
Two most talented teams, and Notre Dame and Oklahoma just didn't stand a chance against either one of them. So, this let these two teams play twice or something like that next year instead. But, Rich, are you taking Bama too?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's hard not to. I know that they're just a complete and total juggernaut. I was watching that same game. I had that same thought where I was like, oh, they're just so much bigger. Like, Oklahoma is a good program with professional athletes on it. And my gosh, Alabama could eat them, all of them. And so, Alabama is a stronger team top to bottom. Clemson is a very strong team in and of their own right. If Alabama didn't exist, Clemson would be the ultimate powerhouse. But yeah, kudos to Alabama, just Tua. I mean, everything is just so great. I wish that all of the Alabama players could join the Patriots.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we'll take the quarterback, we'll take Jerry Jeudy, we'll take Quinn Williams. Like, just bring them all with you, Nick Saban, next year. But watching Quinn Williams go up against that freshman center of Oklahoma, just like, I felt bad for the kid. It's like, here's this like 18-year-old kid just like essentially trying to block. Like, yeah, he's really good too. And that Oklahoma offensive line won whatever the offensive line of the year award is, and like, they still had no chance of blocking Bama. They had like multiple first round picks too. Anyways, on CLNSmedia.com, wrote something about James White this week. Can also make my case for Stephon Gilmore, pound the table. I think that he deserves all-pro consideration, maybe even first team, just from what he's done. If you look at some of the receivers that he's shut down this year, like, these are no slouches. We're talking about like Hopkins, Antonio Brown, Stephon Diggs. There's a long list of Pro Bowl receivers that he's kind of gone toe-to-toe with and really held his own. So check that out as well. And then no game this weekend, so obviously I'm going to have a few days off here. But then the Patriots are back in business on Monday, going to be right back to work on Monday, and we'll know by then who they're playing. So we'll see what happens then. But thanks again, Rich, for coming on. National championship game on Monday. Obviously, we're pretty excited about it. And the football games this weekend, pretty much like a perfect weekend if you're a football fan, with Saturday, Sunday, Monday all loaded with games. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar, for Rich Hill as well. Thanks for listening.